From a sheetrock announce booth in a tiny Ohio town. Here's Fred with this month's DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Doc, and welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for May 2002. This is issue number 206, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey, the publisher of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, sitting out here in the backyard of the Sheetrock Announce Booth. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, that's spelled M-A-C-K-E-N-Z-I-E, Drive, Lima, L-I-M-A, Ohio, 45805-1835. You can contact me by telephone at 419-228-6223. The fax number is 419-221-1609. And the action line is 419-224-1609. And that's for musings to members only. If you're on the internet, you can send me email at fredv, that's F-R-E-D-V, at nrcdxas.org. And the National Radio Club's website is at www.nrcdxas.org. If you'd like to become a member of the DX Audio Service and live in the United States of America, the cost is $28. To members in Canada, the subscription rate is $32. And to Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address in Lima that I just mentioned on the introduction. Well, we've got a lot of material to cover on this edition, including some convention information, so let's just switch it right over to Jerry Starr with a look at the AM Switch.
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with the May edition of AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News magazine. Two editions of the Switch this month, reflecting the printed version switch back to monthly editions during the summertime DX season. We start with reference number 534, these call letter changes. On 610 WSLC, Roanoke, Virginia becomes WVBE. 880 WTZY in Fairview, North Carolina, a suburb of Asheville, becomes WPEK. 1280 WWAR, Appomattox, Virginia, changing to WOWZ. 1360 KSRX, El Dorado, Kansas, becomes KAHS. 1420 WWSR St. Albans, Vermont, changing to WTWK. 1450 WFPG Atlantic City, New Jersey, becomes WKXW. 1460 WCEI in Easton, Maryland, becomes WEMD. And on 1510 KDKO Littleton, Colorado, changing to KNRC. One new station was granted on 1590 in Oakville, Connecticut. It will be 500 watts daytime, 220 watts night, separate directional patterns day and night. And under otherness, on 590 WLVA Lynchburg, Virginia, has gone silent. 900 KREH in Pecan Grove, Texas, this station is finally on the air after moving here from Louisiana. And on 1550 WDZK in Bloomfield, Connecticut, this silent station has returned to the air. Moving to reference number 535, just one call letter change on 1410 KYFV in Victoria, Texas, becomes KNAL. One application for a new station, 1250 in Johnstown, Colorado, and two new stations were granted on 890 in Meridian, Idaho, 50,000 watts daytime, 1,000 watts night, directional at night only, and on 1180 in Baxter, Minnesota, 50,000 daytime, 5,000 night, and directional day and night, different patterns. One application of interest on 1200 WQDQ, that station that finally got on the air in Nashville, Tennessee, is once again applying to go full-time by adding 195 watts at night. And under otherness, on 1550 WSHN in Fremont, Michigan, this station was silent, has returned to the air, sort of. For the last month or so, they've had a nonstop unmodulated carrier on the air, but no audio at all, and nobody knows exactly why that's happening. Maybe next month, one of our listeners or readers in that area will be able to tell us what's going on with WSHN. That wraps it up for this month. As we head into the warmer weather, no jealousy this time involved in sending it to Florida. Here's John Bowker.
To contribute to the travelogue, send your top-of-the-hour IDs to John Bowker, 1811 Fort Duquesne Drive, Sun City Center, Florida, 33573. Remember to start recording a minute before and after each top-of-the-hour ID, and make sure you have the legal ID in the recording.
Hello, everybody. Today, we're going to be continuing the 710 frequency on our trip up the dial and heading across the vast westness of our country. And as I mentioned last month, this is a U.S. clear channel, so a lot of stations operate with 50,000 watts during the day and then drop down to just a few thousand watts at night on this frequency. Of course, we heard from two of the biggies last month, the ones in New York and Miami, and we're going to pick up the last one today for you, too. I want to say thanks to Josh Owens for his input this past month. He got a laugh out of the WZOO station break that I had last month for you. That's the one in Asheboro, North Carolina. It seems they've changed their programs from what you heard to a rather strict diet of Southern gospel music. That explains why, you know, when somebody asks me, they say, hey, we're going on a trip and we could make a few recordings. What stations do you need where they're going? And I always say I probably need them all just to keep the Travelogue collection up to date. So, and we received a slew of emails after giving my email address last time, so I've acknowledged each of those. I hope to your satisfaction, but I love hearing from each of you. Now, let's get underway and hear how 710 is populated in a few more towns. We left off in Duluth last month, so that means we can head down the Mississippi River once again. And although this first city is at the far western edge of the state that borders the Mississippi, it's still in Missouri. So let's get started on the May 2002 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
Conservative correctness. Get it from Michael Reagan. Next on Kansas City's Talk Radio 710 KCMO. Kansas City.
CBS News, I'm Christopher Glenn. Some new information about why President Clinton has been insisting he has nothing more to say on the Monica Lewinsky case.
And I will have nothing more to say about that either, I can assure you. Now, you know, there's a lot more to this story here in Kansas City than just playing an ID from KCMO, because the first two times we came up the dial on earlier travelogues here on the audio service, we had KCMO at another dial position. Remember what it was? 810, that's right. So, what was on the air in Kansas City at 710 back before October of 1997?
You're listening to AM 71, home of the great golden oldies of the 50s and 60s. WHB, Kansas City.
AP Network News.
Now, don't feel too badly for WHB, because when KCMO came down to 710, it really just amounted to a frequency swap there. So WHB went up to 810 on the dial. They went from 10,000 watts that they had had at 710 up to 50,000 watts at 810, with a nearly identical north-south night pattern. But I can only guess the confusion that must have created in Kansas City. We're going to continue down the Mississippi River, and the next state we come to is Arkansas.
Sunny 107 KKSY KAPZ, Bald Knob, Searcy.
Do you have any idea where Bald Knob, Arkansas is? It's about 60 miles north of Little Rock. It runs with 250 watts way out in the country, and one wonders what the target audience must be. And by the way, I picked that one up driving south out of Branson, Missouri. Now, this next station is another anomaly in the world of frequency assignments, in my view. This city that we're coming to has a population of 190,000 or so. In size of market in the United States, it's number 141, and that's great. But here's the odd thing. The city is Shreveport, Louisiana. It has two 50,000-watt radio stations, two of them, and there are markets with over 2 million people without any 50,000-watt stations. Let's hear from Shreveport at 710 on lots and lots of people's dials.
USA Divine.
71 Keel. KEEL Shreveport Bossier. First in news. First in talk.
CNN Radio News. I'm Tammy McCormick.
Okay, we'll continue the travelogue today by crossing into the Lone Star State. And we're going to head down along the Rio Grande River, where all the stations seem to broadcast in Spanish, except one or two.
There's up-to-the-second local weather conditions and forecasts, links to AccuWeather, Texas Satellite, and much more. If you're into what's happening with the weather, it's time you logged on to KURV.com. Find out what you're missing and what's coming. KURV.com. More great all-the-time information from KURV 710 Talk Radio.
The station for all you need to know about news, weather, and sports. KURV, Edinburgh.
All you need to know, KURV 710 Talk Radio.
You'll never guess from ABC News. I'm Karen Chase. Hurricane Irene appears to be heading for North Carolina.
As long as it keeps away from Florida, that's fine. Except for people living in North Carolina, right, Josh? Well, anyway, let's retreat to the north country of Texas.
KGNC's Open Line follows the news from CBS at the top of the hour. Coming up next, right now at KGNC Amarillo, 58 degrees at 9 o'clock.
KGNC's on
the radio. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
Okay, Bill. Fred Volpe loves the great North Country. Maybe not as far north and as west as our next entry.
Devil's Lake at 75, Grand Forks 79, 82 in Fargo, Jamestown 73, Dickinson 73. Bismarck and Mandan, we have partly cloudy skies. We're at 79 at Newstalk 710 KXMR.
This is Rush Limbaugh and the EIB Network on Newstalk 710 KXMR. Bismarck, Mandan.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm John Baskin.
You know, that's another station operating with 50,000 watts daytimes at 710 on the dial, and they drop way down at night. In fact, though, KXMR has a permit for 13,000 watts during critical hours, and then goes down to 4,000 watts when sunset really arrives and takes hold. And speaking of dropping down a few hundred miles into the mountains of the Centennial State.
Talk with Al Momberg, weekday mornings at 9 on KNUS, Denver, AM 710, the talk station.
This is BRN News for Friday, July 3rd, 1992. I'm Kerry O'Brien. President Bush says he's going to sign the newest bill.
Doesn't matter what the bill was. That was 1992. Now, this next station has a great story going with it. Do you remember 2 months ago I mentioned that I didn't have KUET on tape from Black Canyon City? Well, by golly, within a week, I had a tape from Carl Dabelstein to alert me to the fact that it was just as well that I didn't have one from before, because at 9 o'clock, you see, that next Tuesday morning or whatever, they were going to change everything, and he would make a recording of it and send it to me. And he did. Now, this tape is in several little pieces, so you'll understand. At first, what you'll hear is several days ahead of the big change here at KUET. This is what they were broadcasting.
Stay tuned. A change is coming to Phoenix Radio this Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. Mark your calendars, tell your friends, but don't miss the birth of a new station in Phoenix. We are 710 AM KUET, Black Canyon City, Phoenix.
Okay, you got the message? Well, now what Skip did was to continue, and at the appointed hour, he made a recording of KUET at the moment of the big change.
AM KUET, Black Canyon City, Phoenix.
The American Taliban in court. I'm Richard Davies.
Well, now that's what happened at the big change there at KUET. Ah, dear. Maybe we can get Skip up to Lima for the National Radio Club DX Audio Service convention in September, and he'll tell us all about the big changes at KUET. I sure hope so. Hey, in fact, Carl, that's great. Thanks for the effort, and I'm sorry for both of us that nothing really happened. But that brings us to the City of Angels and the unbelievable thing that happened a few years back in New York City when the radio station of the New York Times went over to Mickey Mouse. Remember that? Yeah, it happened. It's still there. Darned if a very similar switch didn't happen to the 710 station in Los Angeles.
Hey, commercials are over. We're back.
You got it. Let's get back to the music.
710 KDIS, Los Angeles.
Radio Disney has returned. Please carry on.
Radio Disney, we're on air.
All right, but for those of us that take DXA really seriously, we still can't believe that KDIS is a real radio station. So here's the way our station of that stature really should sound. And I've got 30 years of IDs from this station to prove it.
Angels batting in the bottom of the fifth, trailing the Orioles 4-1. Before J.T. Snow steps to the plate, let's pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the California Angels Radio Network.
Hi, this is Tony Vimino. Join me Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. for the critically acclaimed Attica Radio Show here on 710 Sports, KMPC Los Angeles.
Somebody once told me never argue with anyone who buys printer's ink by the barrel, and don't ever cross the Disney Company, so I would like to publicly apologize for any hint that I was disrespectful to KDIS. Let's quickly move on to the Sacramento market. And we end our tour of the United States with our dials locked on AM 710 with that enormous signal from Seattle, most of which is beamed at night, at least, to the northwest.
The right field. Braggs over quickly to cut it off as Dykstra rounds first. Braggs will get it in, and the Phillies have a leadoff base runner. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves on the CBS radio network.
Do you hate waiting for traffic reports? Stay tuned to 710 AM. You'll get traffic reports every 8 minutes, mornings and afternoons, right here on KIRO Seattle.
Jim Hunter with George Grand at Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati.
Now, we certainly can't leave this frequency without paying respects to one of the more ingenious operations that the Canadians had in service at one time. They wanted a substantial radio station in Leamington, Ontario. That's a little to the southwest of Buffalo, New York. But the only way they could engineer it was to operate only at night and at 7:30 on the dial, which is a Canadian clear channel. That is, unless the United States would let them have a daytime-only station at 7:10. So they applied for both and were granted exactly that. So every evening at sundown, they would turn off CHYR at 7:10 on the dial and instruct their listeners to change their radio dials for the evening programs.
Channel 7 Cheer Radio, fine-tuning time.
Cheer Radio must pause for pattern and frequency change. Allow at least 10 seconds of silence for the necessary technical adjustments. Now move your dial to 7:30 and wait for this sound to return.
Okay. And they changed from CHYR to CHIR, so it stayed Cheer Radio, and very few people noticed the difference. That's kind of cute. And that's a wrap on the 710 dial position. Next month, we'll cover the entire spectrum of stations operating at 720 on the dial. Hey, it's time to move north here on the DX Audio Service, right up to the gateway city of Nashua in New Hampshire. Bruce Conti is next.
You're listening to the flagship station of CBS News and the New York Yankees. This is WCBS New York, an Infinity Broadcasting Station.
WCBS News time 12 midnight. At this time, WCBS New York 880 leaves the air for transmitter maintenance. We'll return to the air at 5 a.m.
Hello, DXers. I'm Bruce Conti, and this is the DX Digest. DXer and active member of the NRC, Rick Keneally, officially dubbed it March Madness when two New York City 50-kilowatt clear channel stations, WFAN on 660 and WCBS 880, went off the air after midnight until 5 a.m. Eastern on Friday and Saturday night, or should I say Saturday and Sunday morning, March 16th and 17th. March, of course, can produce some of the most interesting DX reception of the year, with the vernal equinox and changing solar conditions, but this made it special for many DXers in the nighttime coverage areas of WFAN and WCBS. For many, it was the first time reception of Alberta, Canada, and not just one station, but two stations from Alberta, CFFR Calgary on 660, IDing as Good Times Great Oldies 66 CFR, and on 880 CHQT Edmonton, Good Times and Great Oldies, Cool 880. That was 66 CFR, CFFR Calgary on 660, as received some 2,000 miles away in New Hampshire with WFAN off.
Okay.
tuned on 880. That was CHQT Edmonton with a cool 880 jingle while WCBS was off. Also on 880 was a radio station carrying Christian music from the Moody Broadcasting Network, heard by Jim Renfrew in Byron, New York, and by me in New Hampshire. Neither of us caught a station identification, but the Moody website lists KHAC, Window Rock, Arizona, City of License, Say Bonito, New Mexico, as the sole affiliate on 880 kilohertz. Most of the time WCBS was off, Radio Progreso Cuba was dominant on 880. 660 was the more active frequency, while WFAN was off. Three radio stations from Mexico took turns dominating the frequency. XEEY, Aguas Calientes, Mexico, on 660, with the distinctive La Consentida, no, 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 ID.
La Consentida, solamente.
XEEY, La Consentida, radio station number one from Mexico on 660. Then a second Mexican station faded up on the frequency.
La Candela y la delegación Álvaro Obregón te invita. Recuerde, la Avenida de la Paz de Insurgentes, 17 de marzo, a partir de las 12 horas.
XEDTL, Mexico City, La Candela, Amplitude Musical. Later in the morning, yet another station from Mexico made an appearance on 660. EAR, Tampico, Mexico, La Mexicana, only 1,000 watts according to the 2002 World Radio TV Handbook. The other two are 50,000 watts. The most dominant of all three was XEEY, La Consentida, no, 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 no. Just like saying La Consentida, no, 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 no.
Reporting on New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut from the world headquarters of CBS News, this is WCBS.
That's
where
I'm especially in the suburbs in the early morning hours, especially on Long Island and some of the outlying suburbs, especially in the low valleys. Otherwise, mostly cloudy early this morning. Possibility of showers developing. It is 52 degrees now at 5:04 in the morning. In a brief programming note, we are back on the air. The transmitter was being repaired overnight. If you tried to get us from 1 to 5 a.m. and could not, that is the explanation. We were down for maintenance. We're back on the air. Good morning.
It pays to scan your regular strong signals, especially on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday mornings. You never know when one might be off for maintenance of the transmitter or antenna system. Rick Keneally is launching a new column on the print side of the NRC in the NRC's DX News magazine, his column called Silent Nights. We'll try to keep DXers up to date with scheduled downtime of radio stations. In some cases, though, the only advance notice will be something like, we expect to be off sometime in the next month or so. If you're on the internet, join the NRC DXAS email reflectors, DX Tip for hot tips, and the AM discussion Racing Group for the latest info. Visit the NRCDXAS webpage to learn how to sign up. www.nrcdxas.org. Many DXers learned about the WFAN and WCBS silent periods through the email groups. More next time on the DX Digest. I'm Bruce Conti, 73, and good DX.
Thanks, Bruce. Bob Gallerstein has taken on some new duties. He writes, I will be the new QSL manager for WABC, WEVD, WQEW, and WPLJ. The chief engineer was glad to be relieved of those responsibilities. He promptly handed me a batch of letters that he recently received, most of them from Europe. But one of them was from National Radio Club member Don Trelford. New cards have to be printed, so those waiting for a reply, please be patient. It's nice to be getting back into the hobby, plus interesting to see what the other side of these QSLs are about. Hope I don't regret it.
Stereo 101, KHJ FM, Los Angeles.
Mark Dernberger on the road again, and this time we're in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Coon Rapids, we'll tell you about a little bit later. You may be familiar with it from the Doonesbury comic strip. But for more than 60 years, Coon Rapids has also been the home of a 50,000-watt clear channel radio station, WCCO. And for 32 of those 60 years, Jerry Miller was a very important part of the staff and finished his career at WCCO as chief engineer. So we couldn't think of a better guy to take us on a tour of the WCCO transmitter plant in Coon Rapids. And right now, Jerry, we're in the transmitter engineer's office.
This is a office that was occupied by many of the chiefs out here. The transmitter chief, really.
That was a pretty big title, wasn't it?
It was. It was a great title. It was a very important position to keep this station going.
Somebody told me that some of the early transmitter chiefs wore suit and tie.
Absolutely. One of the most memorable transmitter supervisors was George Collier. Of course, George Collier goes back to World War II, and he spent some time in England and on the research and development of radar over the horizon there to watch to make sure that when the Germans were coming across the channel, they could detect them. So it was that level of expertise and engineering that attracted George here after the war to be the engineering supervisor here at the transmitter. And he had so many stories to tell, and it was just a colorful period in my life to be able to have him under his tutelage here at the transmitter. Fantastic. And, of course, he was used to being in a uniform in the military. When he came out here at the transmitter, he was dressed up, and he represented the fact that this was just not a gardener's paradise out here, although it is 25 acres, a pretty rural facade. He came out in his finery just as he was going to dinner.
Typically, what did the chief transmitter engineer have to do? What was he responsible for?
Well, of course, keeping on the air, number one priority, but there was a whole string of duties, daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly, and he actually administrated the transmitter crew. It was not just the chief transmitter engineer, it was the support staff that he had out here. At one time, there were lockers. I think there were seven different lockers because it was manned 24 hours a day. There was always a person out here, and the chief engineer of the transmitter supervised all of those duties, which included daily routines. And you would come into the transmitter site and look at the file card and see that this was Wednesday, and on every Wednesday you would burnish the contracts on this type of audio rack, and on Thursday you do this, and then of course you had your seasonal routines. Sometimes we're involved in taking some field strength readings out to see how the signal was doing, and of course the maintenance of the facility.
Now, and then back to FCC compliance. What did they have to do to comply with FCC operation?
Well, of course, you had to log everything. You had to log your meter readings. We had to do that in the early days. We'd do it every 15 minutes, then it was every half an hour, and then it was every 3 hours, and now you have to log it as often as necessary to feel that you're in compliance. So the rules have really, really changed, but certainly taking frequency measurements. Of course, taking the readings, all of your plate voltage, plate current readings, the tower base antenna current, of course, told you how many RF amps you had going into a 50-ohm load, or in this case, it was a 79-ohm load. And the RF current was 24.6 amps. And if you do your math on that, that comes out to about 50,000 watts of power delivered into that antenna.
So you were logging it. So I could go back to a log that was written out here in 1940 and find out how much power you were putting out on May 5th, 1940.
Oh, sure. That was part of the record keeping that you needed. But what we really were doing there is assuring the management, the ownership, that the station was running on all eight cylinders, 830, and of course, at the same time, complying with the FCC. And of course, you had to maintain your frequency plus or minus 20 cycles for AM in modern times. After was right on the, you know, plus or minus.
Have to touch it.
Yeah, hardly ever had to touch that. But in the early days, it was critical, of course.
Well, let's take a tour, Jerry, of this transmitter plant. This building was built in...
Well, the groundbreaking here happened in 1937. It went on the air in 1938.
The building is, in today's radio business, it's kind of disappointing. You go out to these transmitter sites and there's no one around. We know that transmitter that I'm looking at over there, that Harris DX50, is being controlled from a studio downtown. And there's no need to have someone out here.
Well, it's different, and of course the whole world is different. This is not the era of my youth, but the building is in great shape. It's a concrete building. It's got hot water heat in it, you know, so, but it has changed, and it doesn't have maybe the energies and the synergies of engineers running here and there and things to do. It's been a victim of evolutionary technology and reliability. Reliability has allowed this station to be unmanned because of remote control and new transmitters. The transmitters that we have here today, of course, are nowhere near the care and feeding that we had to implement with the old transmitters.
We're standing in a room that's, I'm guessing 40 by 30 and about 18 feet tall here, would you say?
Yes, it's a very high ceiling. And
what's the reason for that? I noticed that the transmitters are enclosed. And
well, the reason for it is there's plenums above the transmitter, and having tall ceilings allowed for plenty of air to be there. And of course, in the older days, we had taller equipment.
All right, we're standing in front of the transmitter control console.
Well, this desk goes back to my very first days here at WCCO, where this control console gave you command and control over the two transmitters that were here. At the time that I first walked into the building, there were two Western Electric water-cooled transmitters. They still, to this day, have two transmitters, a main and an auxiliary. But as we stand here today, the framework of the old console, the desk, drawers on each side, the meters are here. To my left, we're looking at a Continental 317C that replaced the old Western Electric water-cooled transmitter. And then looking straight on over the desk, we now see a brand new solid-state Harris 50-kilowatt transmitter.
But from this desk, this is sort of the nerve center.
When you were on duty, you were here, right over in this drawer right here, we had a file card. Oh my God, they're still there. Here are the routine file cards that you would do on Monday morning. See this? It says Monday morning. What would you do there? What's it say there?
First, inspect all equipment upstairs and down for proper operation. When in use, check humidifier, oil, motor, fill with water as necessary. Take transmitter meter readings, throw line key. On odd dates, you'd throw it to line number one.
That's right.
And then on even dates, you'd throw it to line number two.
Okay, that...
What is line number one and line number two?
Well, transmitter line number one and number two. The audio phone lines from downtown.
There were two separate phone lines.
Yes, so if one failed. But that was your daily routine, and it just... And that goes back to 1963. I guess I was there at that time. I was here in 1963. So at that time, I was doing some of these routine. God, wasn't that something? To open that drawer and see these routine cards still here today, it gives me a chill. And then we had the evening shift. They had to do their duties. Here was on an evening shift.
Dust off front of both transmitters and outside of attached fences. Clean all front panel glass.
Absolutely.
Yep. Dust off front of audio equipment.
And you have to remember, George Collier was sitting in a suit right in that office over there looking through those glass windows. And you better well, if there was a nut or a bolt missing, he would know about it.
Now, in the shop, every 3 months, you had to sort all nut and bolt jars so that each had its proper size.
Well, that's correct,
this place was like a military operation.
Yes, and the janitor even had his routine of cleaning and sweeping the floors. I'm very pleased to report to all the listeners out there that this floor that we're standing on right now is
glossy.
Is glossy, and it's stayed really shiny, and it's a nice build. Actually, this building would remind you of a firehouse, really. It was spick and span. It was like you would go into a fire department. So anyhow, I'll put these cards back in our drawer over here to the right.
Now, here is a clock that runs backwards. Can you explain what that was for?
Well, that's for your downtime. One clock would stop exactly when the outage occurred, and the other clock would start telling you how long you're off the air. And then right above there, we have, of course, the most critical parameter of all, and that's the RF current into the antenna.
All right, now I'm looking at some transmission lines, which are the cables that carry the signal out there, but they're at 50,000 watts, and they're not just ordinary cables, are they?
Well, no, these are actually copper tubes with an insulated center conductor.
These things are 3.5 inches in diameter, aren't they?
Yes.
And how big is the conductor in the middle, inside?
It's about an inch or so.
Are they kept under pressure to keep water out?
Yes, there's pressure to keep the integrity of the line so that no moisture gets in there. And then, of course, they run underground all the way out to the tower. They run out to the tower, some 600+ feet underground.
You have two of those, too?
Oh, there are two of them.
One fails?
Oh, yeah. One fails, you got a backup on it. And then they come up into the transmitter tuning unit, the ATU, which is housed in a big building out there. And from there, it goes into a matching network, which retunes it to the tower.
And then overhead here is the plumbing that switches all of these.
Well, this is an automatic transfer switch. It's a remote control motorized patch cord, really. It can either look at the transmitter 1, transmitter 2, or the dummy load. During normal operation, it routes the RF energy from the transmitter that's selected to be on the air out to the antenna tuning unit.
Well, it's midwinter here in Minnesota, so we're not going out to the tower site. I hope you don't mind, but maybe you could do a quick description of that tower, and we'll talk about why it's too long.
Well, it was originally designed for 810 kilohertz, and when they moved to 830...
That would have been in 1941.
Yes, a shorter tower could have been used, but the fact of the matter, they had the steel in place. And why do that when you can do it electrically with a antenna tuning unit?
What's the size of that tower? How big do you think the face is?
The face of the tower is about 5 feet.
5 feet, and it's
652 feet high. And its guide has two layers of guying on it.
But not at the top, I noticed.
Not at the top. The top section stands alone.
So there's guys at about a couple hundred feet.
Yes.
And then maybe about 500 feet.
Right. And they are about the size of your thumb, the wire itself. And they're connected to insulating balls to make sure that the tower itself is the antenna, unlike FM, where the tower is a tower and the antenna then is mounted to the tower. Here, in AM broadcasting, the tower is the antenna along with the ground system. What you see here at the antenna aspect is only half of the antenna. The other half, of course, is in the ground. There's radials at every 3 degrees, and they go out in a circle around the base of the antenna for 365 degrees. And of course, one of the routines on your little checklist, your daily checklist or monthly checklist, I guess, it was to check the radials. Just buzz them out and make sure that way back in the early days, a cow hadn't stepped through there and busted one of those radials or a gopher got it.
You're talking about all these copper, it's like a fan of copper wires in the ground.
Yes.
And they go out at least as far as the tower is long. How tall is this tower?
652 feet.
Okay, so let's say that these copper wires go out 650 feet and they just stop. How can you, what'd you call it, buzzing them out?
Well, buzzing them out. In this case here at WCCO, there's a stake out there at the end of each radial. And what we did is have a buzzer from one radial to the next. Of course, when you actually buzzed out or rung out the radials, you would attach one end of your ohmmeters to one of the stakes. And the other, you'd have a line over to the other one.
You wanted to make sure that the copper was continuous from all the way into the tower and back out on the other one. That's how you got your circuit.
Okay. Exactly.
All right. And that's part one of our magical tour of the WCCO radio transmitter site at Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Mark Dernberger here on the road again for the DX Audio Service, and we'll be back next month to complete this tour. Till then, good listening, DXers.
And here's some information about the Lima 2002 National Radio Club Convention. I'm still finalizing details for this year's National Radio Club Convention to be held here in Lima, Ohio. The convention starts on Friday, August 30th, with registration and activities starting at about 12 noon. The convention will end on Monday, September 2nd at 12 noon. The cost of the convention is $40 per member, with a spouse or significant other at $20. Both must register at the same time to take advantage of this special rate. The registration covers all the refreshments, snacks, and beverage for your stay here in Lima. A special QP hamburgers dinner will be provided on Friday night, provided that we have enough hamburgers after John in Pittsburgh shows up. Just kidding, John. Saturday night is the convention banquet. To book your hotel room, call the Hampton Inn Direct at 419-225-8300. That's 419-225-8300. Be sure you mention NRC to get your special room rate of $69 per night. Rooms are single, double queen, and king size, and there's no limit on the number of people in the room. For Hampton Inn guests, there'll be many, many discounts and special offers. Hampton guests get a free continental breakfast every morning, starting at 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Guests also get 10% off any meal at Ralphie's Sports Bar. Also, Hampton registrants get 10% off any meal at Texas Roadhouse Steakhouse. Please note, if you stay at any other hotel, the free meals and discounts do not apply. One thing that would help me is knowing what kind of dinner you would like to have while you're staying here in Lima. The folks at Ponderosa treated us real nice in 2000, but I'd like to look at a nice sit-down dinner at a place that serves home-style food with a large selection of entrees. If you have any suggestions, please contact me and let me know. Additionally, I'm thinking of starting dinner about 6 o'clock so that we can get back to the hotel by 8 p.m. for the business meeting and auction and not be rushed through dinner. By the way, WNRC will be on the air this year and with a slightly different twist. We will be live unless there is not someone around to run the station. So if you're interested in taking an air shift, please let myself or Phil Wayne know. We're also negotiating with a local provider to webcast the entire convention, including some of the times when people are jockeying on the air, the seminars, the business meeting, the auction, and whatever else happens. Hopefully we'll be able to pull that off as we get closer to the convention. I'll give you more details a little later. And I'll also give you the frequency details for WNRC when we have that all determined. I'll have more information on the 2002 National Radio Club Convention on our next edition. And speaking of conventions, Paul Swearingen wrote in DX News the following. As announced by host Fred Vobey on the March edition of the DX Audio Service, we're headed back to Lima this year after a too-long period of almost bids, no bids, rumors, conjectures, and 11th-hour efforts. Fred's offer to host the convention met the Board of Directors' cost guidelines first, but I can mention that several other National Radio Club members had worked on bids to ensure that we would have a convention this year, some coming after Fred had put together enough of the package to announce it. So thanks to Fred for putting together a package that was finally acceptable to the Board of Directors. What happened to other bids? Therein lies a rather tangled story, one which I hope is not repeated in 2003, but it may be unless prospective 2003 convention hosts get it together by August 1st. Without going into a blow-by-blow account, I can tell you that convention chairman Ernie Wesolowski incredibly received no bids by his deadline of August 1st, 2001, a deadline which allows time for consideration of the bid by Ernie and the Board of Directors so that the convention site for the following year may be announced at the convention. Now, on behalf of Ernie and some 60 to 100 members who fairly regularly attend NRC conventions, including me, who has attended every convention from 1988 on, and a half dozen more, starting with the 1977 Lincoln, Nebraska convention, including his own convention, that is Paul's in 1989, I'd simply like to admonish all potential convention hosts that you cannot wait until the last minute to bid, plan, and put together a convention. It's simply unfair to all concerned to suddenly wake up one morning, months after the deadline, and decide that you'd like to try a convention. And I'd strongly suggest that anyone considering hosting the 2003, 2004, and even the 2005 convention to start now to make plans. And if you don't win the bid for the 2003 convention, don't give up, as the board of directors would be quite happy to have a valid bid for more than 1 year ahead in the can. And while sitting out here in the backyard, I should make mention of a few other things. A while back, I urged members to please get me their telephone numbers or valid email addresses for our database. The reason that I need these are to contact you in case there is a problem with your subscription. Fear not, I'll not give your telephone number to the jackals of telemarketing or call you at odd hours to interrupt your sleep pattern. It's simply to contact you in the event of a problem with tapes. For example, tapes have come back from Sandra Terrio and Mike Corcoran. If you know these members, please have them contact me so I can get their tapes to them. The United States Postal Service says that these members no longer live at their address that we have in the database. I've had several members inquire if dues will go up again. The answer is a definite no. The United States Postal Service will raise the cost of postage in the near future, but this was projected into the last dues increase, so everyone is safe, at least till the postage goes up more than a dime or so. One thing that would really help defray the future costs of dues would be a donation to the National Radio Club's auction, which is held each year at the convention. The money that is raised at the auction offsets the losses the club takes in postage or supplies cost increases. And if you have not heard me say this enough, the club is not a business, so it does not have deep pockets nor any government connections to bail us out. We survive on our own as a dedicated radio listener and friends of each other. So how can you help? If you have any spare items that you can afford to donate, please think about these as contributions. Items from you, friends, business associates, or even items that you have arranged for donation are gladly welcome. They're all put into the pot, and the money raised at the auction helps the club. Please don't send non-working items. However, if you have a GE Super Radio that you're not using, some recording equipment, or something else that you would bid on at a convention, please get in touch with me on how you can donate to the National Radio Club auction. Items are going to be needed by August 15th.
Cheer Radio, fine-tuning time!
We now pause for pattern and frequency change. Flip over to side two for more of the DX audio service.
Stay here with the funny people. That's just the way we like it. Be one of the zany people. Living the life of Riley. WIPC. Echo, echo, echo in Indianapolis. WIPC. WIPC. WIPC.